eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A busy Sunday for Iowa men's and women's basketball. The women capture their third straight Big Ten tournament title, while the men, cold shooting woes at the end of the day, Sean, cost them against Illinois. Not totally out of the woods for a potential NCAA tournament bid, but it's going to take a lot of work, I think, in the Big Ten tournament. We're going to dive right into that first, and then we'll get back to Caitlin Clark and Lisa Bluder and the Iowa women. Looks like they're going to be having their first number one seed since 1992. Charles Krem of ESPN.com projected Iowa as the number two overall seed and the second number one seed. But we'll dive into some of that in a little bit. But Sean, you were there covering the game last night while I was up in Minneapolis. Give me your take from the game. I think the shooting numbers kind of told it all.
Yeah, it was a frustrating performance right from the start. I mean, there were a couple pretty wide open shots I thought that Josh Dix had in the first couple minutes of the game that, you know, usually we're pretty used to them seeing go down, and they were just not going down. And ultimately, that start that they had really cost them at the end of the day. Started the game 1 of 14. I think they were 0 of 6 from 3 during that stretch. Illinois had a 17-2 lead, and, you know, we're doing a lot of – I mean, they got off to a better start, obviously, but they were also struggling to start the game too. Like, it wasn't like, you know, it was a huge disconnect outside of when Illinois really started to get going. So that kind of carried over the course of the game. I thought – later on in the second half, I think Iowa finished like 11 of 19 from the field, something along those lines. And, you know, they were able to cut the lead to single digits, and then it was within 10 by halftime. And, you know, you felt okay about it going into the locker room. But as the second half hit, I mean, they had so many chances just to make it, you know, a one possession game, and they made it a two possession game on multiple occasions, but we're just not able to hit those timely buckets that Illinois was able to get, such as when Marcus Damask hit that fadeaway jumper. And there were a number of other plays too, that buckets that Illinois was able to get that ultimately helped them win the game. And it was interesting because, you know, this Iowa team doesn't shoot a lot of threes, but granted, it felt like they were rushing a couple of times because Illinois was giving them those opportunities to shoot threes, it felt like. And Iowa obviously needed to come back in the game and, you know, hit shots to get back in the game, but we're not able to do it. And, you know, that's honestly ultimately what I thought, you know, played a big deciding factor. I mean, Peyton Samper hit a couple big threes in the second half to, you know, make it a 6-point game. But, you know, if there were other shots that potentially, if they went in, could have been big difference makers and, you know, weren't able to go through the net. So, yeah, it was a frustrating night because, you know, there's a lot of hype around that game. A lot of, you know, if the Iowa wins this game, then they're probably an NCAA tournament team, right? They're at least on the right side of the bubble, depending on what happens. There were a couple scenarios this weekend that hurt Iowa's seeding or, you know, Iowa's chances of making the tournament. But that's a game you got to have. You had to win that game. I mean, there's still a chance to make it in, but you're feeling a lot better about yourself if you win that game. And Illinois came in with a good game plan. I mean, Fran McCaffrey said that Illinois really didn't do much different to win that game compared to a couple weeks ago, besides maybe Terrence Shannon having a better game shooting the ball than he did And he did a really good job on Tony Perkins too. I mean, like I said, with the shot making, they weren't making their threes, but I think they were like, Iowa was like 6 of 19 on layups or something like that per stats broadcast. So there were a couple buckets around the basket that didn't go in. And you know that if you're not hitting those shots along with your three pointers and you're not grabbing offensive rebounds, that's a big issue. And Illinois was able to take advantage of that. And you know, it was a frustrating night. And you know, I mean, a one bright spot, I guess, not to go on too long, Brock Harding, he was really good. And I thought it was interesting that Fran only played him 2 minutes in the second half compared to having Tony out there for 18 in the second half. I know that was really controversial, especially after the spark that Brock gave Iowa when he went onto the floor and Perkins went onto the bench in the first half.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were curious about that. So yeah, I mean, ultimately frustrating loss, but hey, you gotta win a couple games in the Big Ten tournament. And you know, if you beat Ohio State on Thursday, you get another shot at Illinois, and it's tough to beat a team three times.
Here's the thing. So I think Iowa, as you said, Sat Brock has here 8 of 23 on dunks and layups combined, 6 of 19 on layups. The Brock Harding thing is interesting to me because I understand, I think what Fran's process was, just, you know, obviously covering him as long as I have, he trusts Tony Perkins in big moments. We've seen Tony Perkins deliver in big moments. And, you know, it being senior night, that Fran probably thought he was going to step up and make a couple of big plays happen. I mean, if that dunk goes down to cut it to what, 3 points, 4 points, I think that really could have sparked the team, and who knows how it would have turned out after that. But something else I noticed too, Sean, they were out rebounded 50 to 33. Iowa had three offensive rebounds the entire day on a day where they shot, what, 34% from the field. Illinois had three guys with 8 or more rebounds. I thought they were just so much more the aggressor. They were so much more effective. And if you had told me before the game, Sean, that Coleman Hawkins would be held to 4 points, Domas could be held to 11 based on where he has played lately and how well he's played lately, and that Illinois had 73 points, I tell you, I think Iowa wins, because Illinois' defense has not been great this year. And I thought Iowa was having some pretty decent looks. I just don't think they were going down. I mean, Josh Dix, as you mentioned, he had a couple big three-pointer opportunities early, didn't get it going, and we saw him miss a couple mid-rangers where we really haven't seen much this year. And Tony Perkins, I would say that was probably his worst game of his senior year, Sean, up there, top two maybe. I mean, 1 for 10 shooting, wasn't particularly effective in rebounds. 4 rebounds, 4 assists. And Iowa also only turned the ball over 5 times. So it's not like they weren't shooting. Like, they were getting good shots. And I thought they were doing fine in transition when they were able to get out in transition. But I think the rebounding numbers sold it. I think on a senior night where you get 16 combined points from your seniors, it's just on 2 of 16 shooting.
I don't think it was 16. I think it was 9. Because
Patrick
Perkins had 2.
Cricky, you're right. It was 9. Yep, you're right. It was 9. You can't have that in a must-win game. Senior night aside, I mean, now Iowa going forward, Sean, Ohio State, this ain't the early season Ohio State team. They got a new spark of energy. I don't think this is going to be a gimme by any means. I mean, this is a team that fired their coach a month ago. But if Ohio State beats Iowa and they beat Illinois, guess what? Ohio State's playing for an NCAA tournament berth too. And I think that's going to be something very, very interesting to watch as the Big Ten tournament does get started.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State was the team to knock out Iowa last year in the Big Ten tournament. So I know Iowa probably hasn't forgotten about that. And, you know, Ohio State seems to kind of have a – maybe I'm just – doing recency bias, but they seem to have, I mean, they made that run last year in the Big Ten tournament after the year that they had. I think they lost like 14 of 15, but started to get a little hot down the stretch. They won 2 games down the stretch against Illinois and Maryland when they were top 35 KenPom teams, played Michigan State tight. So, I mean, it's a different Ohio State team. And I mean, when Chris Holton was the head coach for the last meeting between these two teams, you know, Ohio State almost won that game. I think there were a couple I think Felipe Gakpara had like a travel or double dribble down the stretch that ultimately, you know, turned the ball over and gave Iowa a chance of winning the game, or at least, you know, feeling better about it. And, you know, they were just kind of it was really anyone's game in that matchup. I think, yeah, I mean, Iowa felt like they had the Gamecaster win probability was in their favor for most of the game. But, you know, Ohio State made it really tough on them. And, you know, like you said, Ohio State's playing like a completely different team. Beat Purdue at home a couple of weeks ago, you know, have some pretty good road wins at Michigan State. And I mean, Rutgers too. Two teams that have been trending downwards as of late, but anytime you beat Rutgers in New Jersey by 22 points, that's kind of says something. They've been a pretty good defensive team as of late. They've gotten a couple offensive contributions. I mean, Bruce Thornton, Jameson Battle, those are two guys that you have to keep an eye on. Yeah. Devin Royals had good minutes off the bench. Roddy Gale can score for you too. He's, you know, had a nice little streak of games going, a guy that can attack the basket pretty hard. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough matchup. And like you said, both teams are really fighting for a spot. I mean, Iowa's probably in a better position right now for an NCAA tournament bid than Ohio State is. But if you look at the NIT projections, Iowa's the number one seed in the Big Ten for the NIT with automatic qualifiers, while Ohio State's that number two team. So, yes, there's a little bit of separation in terms of resume, but there's still a chance for, I think Ohio State's higher in the net right now, actually. I think they're like 57 and Iowa's 60, something along the lines. So they, in terms of the net, Ohio State does have a better resume, but Iowa maybe has been talked about a little bit more because, you know, with the circumstances of Ohio State. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup without a doubt. I mean, trying to really recall what happened in the last game these two teams met outside of it really being back and forth. And I mean, you have Illinois in the next game, but the thing is, like, you can't look too far forward in the Big Ten tournament because those are situations that are going to get you. And, you know, Iowa put itself in a position now where, you know, you have to rely on yourself winning games in the Big Ten tournament. If you would have beat Illinois, I think they maybe could have gotten away with just beating Ohio State.
Yeah, it would have locked them if they did that. It would have locked them if they beat Illinois and then at least didn't get blown out against Ohio State. And at least that's why most of the projections are saying too.
I think also Iowa would have been a 5 seed if they won yesterday.
Yes.
So I think it would have been a different scenario. But, you know, now you put yourself in a tough scenario. And, you know, I mean, if you get past Illinois, if you get past Ohio State, you get past Illinois, you play Nebraska likely in that semifinal game. And, you know, Nebraska has been playing decent ball, but they're a beatable opponent.
Yeah, no doubt. Kiese Tominaga has turned into one of the more explosive scoring options in the Big Ten too, just with his career and how that's kind of gone too. But, I mean, Ohio State's won 5 of their last 6, got started when they upset Purdue. I think it was the first game after Holtman had been dismissed. But, Sean, I mean, they're not just beating teams by a couple points. They are blowing out teams. I know they lost to Minnesota the game after by 9. They beat Michigan State by 3, beat Nebraska by 9, beat Michigan by 23, and beat Rutgers at Rutgers by 22. So, I mean, this is a team that's kind of gone all over the board lately. Thornton's dangerous. Battle kind of has started to look like the guy I thought Ohio State was getting in the first place because he went through a big struggle, I think, this year, especially shooting the basketball, not – particularly efficient, but when he gets red hot, he gets red hot. And as you know, as you mentioned, Ohio State did beat Iowa last year, but it'll be interesting to see how Iowa responds in this situation. I mean, maybe this is the game where they kind of pull it together and say, hey guys, we have to win too, or we're not going dancing. They'll get to come back to Carver Hawkeye Arena. Iowa will probably host, but at the same time, that's not exactly a fitting ending. And I think there'll be a lot of debate on if this season was a success or not, because I picked Iowa to finish 7th in my preseason projections. And that was, I think, higher than most of the other people, but the Big Ten's also just not been good this year. We just got to call it what it is. This has not been a very deep league, and that's not to discredit Nebraska for what they've done in the league. They've taken a huge step forward, but it's been a bunch of mid teams outside of Purdue. Illinois has shown some flashes, but they're just the Big Ten's not really what it was. There it has been for the past couple of years. So, you know, I think that was a huge letdown game more than anything else yesterday, Sean, because again, you get the sellout crowd. There's a lot of hype. You've kind of worked hard to turn around your season because we did not think Iowa was going to be in this position whatsoever, especially in maybe late December. I mean, after they'd gotten blown out in three straight Big Ten games to open up the season. But at the same time, you know, I think you and I, at least I felt, I can't remember if you did, I thought this was going to be an NCAA tournament caliber team before the season. I didn't necessarily know if they would be a top 25 team. I didn't really believe that, but I also thought they probably deserved the benefit of the doubt of making the tournament. So it'll be very interesting to see how I kind of evaluate after the season with this team, but I am with you on, or and some others about, I thought Brock Harding should have played more. He was the big reason why Iowa got back into it yesterday. I think he played with an extra chip on his shoulder. I know he wasn't shooting the ball particularly great, but he was attacking. He was doing good things with Owen Freeman, got Owen Freeman involved, hit a big transition three to kind of spark the run. And then you only play him 2 minutes in the second half after he put together probably his second best stretch of play, maybe his best stretch of play given the caliber of competition that he was going up against. So I think it was partially on Fran, just in terms of rotations. I would have probably done some things different. I think many other people would. But I would also point to this. I thought Iowa's shots, I thought they got good looks for the most part. They just didn't hit them.
They didn't hit those shots and they were getting the opportunities. But another reason why it's just like such a big stinker is because you look at the last five games leading up to it, you win four or five. You score 88 against Wisconsin. You score 78 against Michigan State. You score 85 against Illinois. Score 90 against Penn State. You score 87 against Northwestern.
Yeah.
And we know that this offense is pretty prone to having some of these rough stretches or some of these times where they just cannot get anything going and they just cannot find, you know, the basket or, you know, just don't seem to work as effectively. I thought Illinois did a really good job of making it difficult around the basket, and we know how much Iowa has prioritized getting shots around the rim this year. You know, if you force them to hit threes, like I feel like in some games they're just not comfortable doing it because they don't shoot as many threes as they have in the past. And you know, there's been games where they've been able to knock down three pointers, but you know, this was one of them where, you know, maybe they were kind of a little surprised that they had as many opportunities as they did from three. And, you know, I was looking at Bartorvik last night during the press conference, and I was thinking to myself, this had to be like the second worst, you know, or second or third worst performance of the year for Iowa, like offensively in terms of points per possession. This was actually the worst performance in terms of points per possession this year, which was lower than that Iowa State game too. I thought the Oklahoma game might have been the lowest one, but Iowa State was the lowest or second lowest, and you know, now this Illinois game is the lowest. And it's just frustrating because if you're an Iowa fan, because you look at, like I said, you look at the last couple of games and how Iowa has really seemed like a different offensive team or a more dynamic offensive team, and you know, one that can rely on the perimeter shot a little bit more than previously this season. And then for them to shoot, you know, 21 threes, only make seven of them, and, you know, really struggle around the basket too, which has been a strong suit for this team offensively this year, shooting 53.2% inside the arc. They get 57.2% of their points inside the arc, which is 18th in the country. You know, if you're relying on a lot of your shots around the rim, like you need those ones to go in. And, you know, there were a couple of mid-range opportunities I thought that maybe didn't go down that usually go down, but it really, you know, kind of hurt to see Iowa not be able to get some of those, you know, buckets around the rim. And, you know, Fran McCaffrey was clearly frustrated later on in the game too, because, you know, Iowa maybe wasn't getting some of those calls on contested layups that, you know, maybe he would have liked. And, you know, that just comes with it. But I think ultimately, like, you look at the shooting numbers, that obviously hurts, but I think overall this game, like, not being able to convert some of those shots inside the arc were really detrimental too. And, you know, not being able to get over that hump that maybe they thought they could have in other games not being able to get over that hump, shooting the ball with the outside shot, I think really put a damper on that one.
Yeah. So basically at the end of the day, like I said, and you've said, I think Iowa needs to win two. I don't see them getting in if they beat Ohio State. I think they need to beat Ohio State and they got to beat Illinois. That's the only way. And Ohio State would probably be the team outside of Purdue that I think Iowa would least like to play right now. Ohio State looks completely different. Just look re-inspired more than anything else. But it's going to be up to Iowa to come out there and look inspired of them, you know, just inspired to go play. And I think that's going to be a big thing to watch, and we'll see if the shots are falling. Because if they're not falling, the team's in major trouble against Ohio State. But then again, we've seen Iowa come back when they've been down by 15-20. I mean, they even came back yesterday. I mean, they were down by up to 21 points early in that first half. I think 9 minutes to go, they were down 21. They got back within five or six, but you use all that energy to come back, it's kind of hard to get over the hump. But we know we'll see what happens. But transitioning from men's to women's basketball, Sean, I mean, it was unbelievable how many Iowa fans were at the Target Center. I mean, there were people lining up at.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
4 or 5 a.m. to wait 10 hours to get in for their session to go watch Iowa. Caitlin wasn't even Caitlin until the second half of the final game. I mean, even her first game, I think she shot 0-12 from three-point range, made one finally, gave kind of a mock celebration because Iowa was up by, you know, I think 27 or 30 at that point. And obviously she had 28 and 15 the other day, but first of all, you got to give a bunch of credit to Nebraska in that championship. I thought they played a great basketball game. Alexis Markowski is all Big Ten worthy. I voted for her to be the tournament. She would have been my tournament MOP if Nebraska had won. Jazz Shelley really kind of knows how to defend Caitlin, did a really good job of that. And Caitlin called it her worst half of her career in that first half, Sean, when she only had 4 points. She looked like an absolute shell of herself, not even just from the production standpoint, but being courtside and watching her body language. I don't know if she was tired. I don't know if she was rattled, but it was the first time in covering Caitlin where I said she looks rattled. It just does not look like her. And then to come out in that second half, put up 30 points, hit big shot after big shot. I mean, those double step backs with a minute to go, those are ridiculous shots. Nebraska played outstanding defense. Like, there's nothing else they could have done. Kate Martin hits a bunch of big three-pointers. Gabby Marshall, who's been up and down kind of all season, but the postseason's really turned it up, comes up with massive defensive plays, hits an early three, does some good things. And Sean, somehow, some way, this team's going to be probably a number one seed. And it really is amazing when you think about the fact they lost Monica Sonato, who is the third leading scorer in program history, four-time All-Big Ten. McKenna Warnock, who was, I believe, an honorable mention All-Big Ten or second-team All-Big Ten wing. You lose all of that, and Iowa stays ranked in the top six all season long and really doesn't get blown out in any game other than that second Indiana game. I mean, I give a lot of credit to Lisa Bluter. I know the team might not be as quote-unquote good as last season, but Caitlin's that much better. Hannah Stolke looks like she's really starting to believe in herself. I'm starting to slowly get back on board that I think this could be a Final Four caliber team. Now, how they match up against some of the elites, I don't know. I think that's going to be take a great game plan and a lot of hustle from Iowa. But between all the storylines and Sydney Afolter really ascending in that in the tournament, just I give a lot of credit to Iowa. I don't know how they won that game yesterday.
Yeah, that was definitely the most exciting game of the day, and you know it wasn't even close. That was something else to see that environment and to see just how resilient and just how much they were able to claw back and stay in it. Neither team was really giving up. Obviously, Iowa was able to get over the hump at the end, but that just goes to show, you know, how – I mean, that's without Molly Davis too. Like, that's –
yeah.
That's big time. That's big time. And there were a couple of games where you saw it. I mean, against North Nebraska, I think especially, where you saw Iowa missing that true five, or that, you know, five that would really match up with the opposing, you know, main front court player. And, you know, that was a little frustrating at times. And that's why I think, you know, some of these games are going to be difficult in the NCAA tournament when you face some of these teams that maybe have a stronger front court, maybe have someone who's better back to the basket than Iowa does. And still too, with, like, you know, playing physical and whatnot, like that could be playing physical with Caitlin, and, you know, 3-point shots not falling. But I think when you look at this Iowa team, like you said, moving up to a number one seed line, I think that's going to be very impactful. And that's, you know, this is like the type of basketball that you want to be playing come March. And I think everyone says that too, that you want to be playing your best basketball come March. And I think that NCAA, yeah, or that Big Ten tournament really helped put Iowa in a good direction, because there were some concerns with this team. I mean, Caitlin, you didn't get her best performance from her yesterday. Obviously, she hit a couple of big shots, but, you know, you had Gabby Marshall step up. You had Hannah Stolke step up. You had Kate Martin step up. You had Cynthia Falter step up. You know, that's what they need. Like, they need consistent contributions from everyone on the team, and not just Caitlin and, you know, maybe even Hannah, or, you know, sometimes Kate. Like, they need five or six players to,
yeah,
I think, really be, you know, a dangerous team. You know, as dumb as that sounds, but, like, if you watch this Iowa team, what happens when, you know, it kind of becomes the Caitlin show sometimes, or not necessarily her fault, but, like, you know, if she feels like she has to put the game on her shoulders, like, that's going to put Iowa in a really tough spot. And, you know, that's what I kind of worry about with some of these potential 8-9 matchups, like, because there are some, sure, teams that, you know, look like pretty strong 8-9 teams. I mean, Iowa State's a 9 seed projected right now. I think Nebraska's an 8 seed projected now. A couple of those teams stand out. And, you know, if they get Nebraska again, like, that, I think Lisa Bluter and them were breathing a huge sigh of relief that that could potentially be the last time they have to play Nebraska this year, because those games are all out wars. And, they, you know, are. They know how to be, like you said, they really know how to be physical with Iowa, and they know, you know, how to kind of push their buttons a little bit and, you know, never let the game seem really easy. So, yeah, it's this team, I think, you know, it's doing what it needs to do at the right time. To see Gabby Marshall step up, I think that's going to be critical. Cynthia Falter, I mean, if she can continue the way she's been playing, like, do you even take her out of the starting lineup, or do you kind of still have Molly Davis coming off the bench? Yeah, I mean, I think you still have to have Molly Davis come off the bench, and you put Sydney in there, because you don't want to – I mean, not that's going to take down her confidence, but I think you got a good thing going right now. And I think, you know, you get to ease Molly back in there a little bit.
I don't think she'll be 100%, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just with the way that knee looked, obviously I'm not a doctor, but, like, she was still heavily limping when she was walking through the Big Ten tournament. We've seen in the past, like, Caitlin will never shoot you out of a game, but there have been games this season where it just looked like the team was afraid to shoot. So Caitlin had to kind of just keep trying to create her own shot. And, you know, at times it's worked, at times it hasn't, and then everybody criticizes Caitlin for shooting too much, but again, if you have people that aren't confident and not willing to shoot, she kind of has to do what she has to do, because you have to be able to get shots up. But I give Gabby Marshall a lot of credit. I know she shot 2 of 7 yesterday, but that girl has not had the season she's wanted to individually. I'm sure she's thrilled with, obviously, a team success. But for her to really kind of emerge here over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, from a three-point perspective, it changes the way defenses are going to guard Iowa. It just does, because at times they were leaving Gabby Marshall completely wide open for three, and she'd still hesitate because she had just completely lost her confidence no matter how many shots she has made throughout her career. So teams would double Caitlin, they'd run a box and one, they would do all these different things. And there is so much physicality on the perimeter that Caitlin deals with. I know people say she's flops, but, man, I'm telling you, like, she gets grabbed, held, pushed more than any player I can remember from the half court line in, and they still almost face Carter from beyond the half court line. But if Gabby Marshall's hitting corner threes, Kate Martin from three has been really, really impressive, because she was not really known as a big shooter throughout the first couple of years of her career. But her hitting those corner threes, her hitting that three on the wing, if Kylie Fierbach can get in there, Taylor McKay, by the way, she's going to make so many three-pointers next year. She's going to be one of the best spot-up shooters in the country. Really, really impressed with her. Defensively, she still has to get there. Creating her own shot, not great, but you can run a lot of different sets for her. But, man, I'll tell you, Sean, if I was scoring 90-plus points in the NCAA tournament and people outside Caitlin are hitting shots, they are going to have a shot against anybody. I don't care who the mismatch is. They just look like – I know it was a close game against Nebraska the other day. It just looks like they're starting to peak at the right time. I've been really impressed with the way this team's progressed.
Yeah, me too. It's been a very positive progression over the last couple, you know, over the last week, honestly. And I mean, even going back to the regular season finale, like it's been, you know, it's been a plus for them, and you know, it's putting them in the right direction. And you know, as I said earlier in the podcast, you want to be playing your best basketball in March. And I think if it's the same thing for women's basketball as it is men's basketball, like if you have guards that can, you know, take games over, then you can win games. But I think really for this team, it's just like you have Caitlin, and, you know, using her to her strengths is going to be, you know, it's worked so far. It's worked for the last 4 years. But, I mean, what was the key of last year's team? You got Gabby Marshall going. You had Monica Cezano playing good basketball. You had a number of others playing really good basketball, too. You know, that's what I think the most positive thing from that Big Ten tournament was, you know, Sydney Falter playing a really high level. Gabby, you know, playing a high level on both ends. You know, and just, you know, there's Hannah Stolke playing well, too. Like, there were just a number of things that I felt were, you know, really good signs, even without Molly Davis, that I think, you know, are kind of have been a little spotty throughout the year, especially in losses. I know I mentioned, you know, that earlier, that you got to have more than just Caitlin play, and, you know, that's obvious, but it really does make a huge difference with this team, because when they're moving in the right direction, like, you know, when they're a balanced team, when they're playing like a normal, like, type of basketball, it makes a whole lot of a difference. Like, yes, Caitlin can be scoring at a high level, but, you know, sometimes her best basketball is her being a creator and a playmaker, not necessarily scoring the basketball. Yes, she does amazing things scoring the basketball, but sometimes her best games are, you know, her being a creator and her, you know, having all the attention on her and, you know, eventually creating opportunities for others. So if they can be able to manage that and they can get contributions from others, yeah, I mean, they should be a Final Four team. And, you know, I know it's going to be tough to, you know, beat out South Carolina, you know, a couple other good teams too. But, you know, they got a shot. They're playing the way that they did in Indianapolis or in Minneapolis.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing too. And something else I've continued to kind of think back on, and I've asked, you know, Lisa about this. I've asked Caitlin about this. I've asked, you know, Hannah Stahl. I've asked a lot of people about it. The fact that they have familiarity with, one, making a run in the NCAA tournament, but two, Sean, there are teams that are not going to be ready to play in front of these crowds and are not used to playing in front of these crowds. I mean, Iowa has sold out and played in a sold-out game in all but two games this entire season. They're used to the Beatles treatment, as some kind of relay it, right? The ticket prices, all the lights are on them, all the viewership. Inexperienced teams will not know how to handle that. This is normal for Iowa at this point. And I think obviously when you have Caitlin, who is just a natural born superstar in all the realms of on-court performance, off the court, just dealing with it all. I mean, shoot, she spent probably 45 minutes post-game signing autographs. I don't think anybody that wanted Caitlin Clark's autograph left without getting her autograph. Like, she understands the bigger picture. And that might be such a minute detail, but their willingness to embrace who they are and know the attention's on them and have an added, like just an added layer of pressure and have it not phase them, that's going to break a lot of teams in the NCAA tournament if they are not prepared for it. Now, again, it's not going to be a cakewalk for Iowa to make a Final Four. None of the tournament ever is. They performed really well last year, obviously. Sweet 16, Elite Eight. I think we all kind of knew at that point that Iowa was built for the Final Four. But that's going to be something that really benefits them going down the stretch. I, quite frankly, I think that's what really helped them come back in that game last night, yesterday against Nebraska. They were down 11. They didn't really flinch. They didn't get in desperation mode. They were down eight with two and a half minutes to go. They weren't broken. And I think there's such a powerful kind of tool to that where there's teams, I think, that match up really well against Iowa. I think there's teams that could give Iowa a lot of problems. I know Stanford has not been playing great lately. I still really believe in Stanford's team. I think Cameron Brink's the best two-way big in America. I think that UCLA can pose a lot of problems with Lauren Betts, 6'7", 20-12, right? And that's with all due respect to Hannah Stolke. LSU would obviously be more of a test in more than one way. South Carolina, I mean, their teams are capable of being Iowa. But if you have Caitlin Clark and you have teams hitting shots like this, Sean, I'm not going to discount Iowa against anybody. They are going to have a shot against everybody that they play. And I think that's something to where I'm really excited to see in the women's tournament. But I'm also curious, will Iowa be able to keep all this momentum that they've built during this bye week? Because we saw what happened after the bye week with the men. Two different circumstances. But I I'm just curious more than anything else what's going to happen with this team. But there's a lot of reasons to, I would think, feel confident about where they're going.
Yeah, and that draw is going to be really fascinating to see who they get at that 8-9 matchup because, I mean, Was that not where Iowa had issues last year in their run to the Final Four?
They played Georgia in the – I believe Georgia was the 7 seed, and their defense really gave Iowa fits. Iowa really didn't pull away until that fourth quarter.
Right, exactly. So, like, that round of 32 matchup, especially as a number one seed, and, you know, you look at some of these teams that are potentially 8-9, like, you know, it's a little concerning, but, you know, that's why I think this draw is going to be really fascinating to see who they kind of pull, because if you get Nebraska as your 8-9 matchup, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but good. That's going to be a tough game.
It'll be a lot of fun. And like I said, I'm not saying Molly Davis is going to be a key to this situation. I think she obviously would help you in a lot of different ways. I think her ability to run the point guard and let Caitlin play off the ball would be really beneficial. But, you know, that kind of brings me to another point. Sean, Sydney Falter played some one. I actually thought Sydney Falter played really well at the one spot. I mean, she wasn't extensively, but there are certain possessions where she got it. And I think that took a lot of pressure off Caitlin. And for Sydney Falter to be able to play point guard at least enough on some possessions like that to keep Iowa's offense moving efficiently while still being that 5'11" guard that can go down and, you know, grab 9 rebounds, grab 10 rebounds, defend post. I think there's a lot of power to that. And like you said, if Molly Davis is not 100%, and again, this is no inside info, it's my speculation. With all due respect to Molly, I don't know how you take Sydney Falter out of the starting lineup. I just think she's playing that good of basketball right now. I mean, she was on the all-tournament team. How I'm sure she would be fine going back to the bench because she'll know she'll get her opportunities. But given where we're at in the point in the season, you need to keep her momentum going for as long as possible. And again, I think she'd be fine with it. I think you need to find a way to work Molly Davis back into it. But I was really, really impressed with what she brought to the table. It's just, again, it was really an all-around team performance. It wasn't the Caitlin show. And quite honestly, that's probably the best thing that could have happened to Iowa is they win the Big Ten tournament with Caitlin really struggling from three until that, you know, second half and that overtime. But Iowa still finding a way to do it. And everybody that was in the starting lineup in the backup roles, they all contributed. So it's Lisa Bluter and them. They know they have a lot to work on, but I think there's a lot of positives that they can draw from it more than anything else. So now the hard part. We just got to wait and see who they draw. And we'll have instant reaction to that. We'll have that we'll see what happens with the men. If they're an NIT team, if they are going to make a run in Minneapolis, become an NCAA tournament team themselves. It'll be a really, really interesting next 7 days. And we'll pop back to kind of recap it all. But any final notes about either one, Sean?
No, I mean, not really. I think we kind of touched on it all, but It's the best time of year for a reason. I mean, you wish that the men's team would maybe have a little more success, and you know, you kind of play like last year with feeling good about an NCAA tournament, but you know, it is what it is. I think really, like, you would love to see this team make it to the NCAA tournament, but NIT is beneficial too, depending on how you look at it. I mean, I don't know how the fan base would take it, but
yeah,
I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. So like I said, well, plenty more at HawkeyeInsider.com. Be sure to stay locked in all week and all weekend. And spring football is around the corner. We should be getting our final spring schedule next week, I believe. I believe we're also meeting with Kirk Ferentz sometime next week as well. The date is not finalized, but we'll be able to kind of chat about that. We'll see where the offense is at. So again, stay locked in to HawkeyeInsider.com, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever, and this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars, new season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.